Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Oh, Jack O'Hara. Boy, you asking me some interesting questions, my man.
It's a great question, Jack.
Jack, hey, it's Josh Radner.
Hey there, Jack O'Hara. It's Johnny Damon.
Jack, you had questions for me.
Jack O'Hara? Absolutely.
This message is for Jack O'Hara. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Jack.
Jack, hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
What's going on, Jack? Listen, man, you know, you asked me a couple questions.
Broadcasting around the world, you're listening to The O Show.
In the show and doing your thing. I mean, you've got some pretty big name guests. I've seen your stuff, so congratulations on your success.
Jack O'Hara.
Much nicer guy than Conan O'Brien, with much better interviewing skills.
Don't forget to share this episode on your social media. Now, let's get to it.
I'm so boned. I forgot to get my girl tickets for the show tomorrow, and now it's sold out. It's her freaking birthday.
Aw, dude. She's totally gonna break up with you.
She's definitely gonna break up with me.
Should've used TickPick.
Wait, what'd you say?
TickPick. Look.
Whoa.
What? There are no hidden fees. What'd you guys think I said?
Oh, TickPick. I thought you said
TickPick. No hidden fees. Download today.
Thanks for having me.
Are you in St. Louis or are you in New York City right now?
I'm visiting. I met my parents. You can tell by the wallpaper. I actually grew up in this room. It was like
holy shit.
Yeah, so
a little nostalgia right there.
Yeah. I came back for March just to see family and work the clubs here because they're open.
That's good. I'm sure New York City's basically shut down still.
Yeah, it's opening back up in April, last I heard. So,
is that the plan to go back?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like it more out there? I mean, obviously the culture's got to be insanely different. I grew up right outside Manhattan, Fort Lee, New Jersey. So, like, I know New York City can be hectic almost 99% of the time. I've actually never been to STL or Missouri in general.
Okay. Yeah.
What are the differences?
There's a lot of differences. I mean, and out here, it's like St. Louis is like a weird mix of like rural and urban. Like it's like there's like kind of like ghetto areas and like a farm like down the street. It's just there's inner city, there's suburbs, there's a little bit of everything. The demographic is like half white, half black. So that's what I. And then up in Manhattan, it's every person, every type of person. So
you meet a lot.
Yeah.
You meet a lot of people. You kind of have to like grow as a comedian in that sense of like what to say, what not to say, what's going to connect with an audience. I feel like making that move to New York City, you kind of had to adapt to a different type of humor than it was, you know, out in the West.
Yeah, I was shocked at when I went up to New York City how darker you can go and how like un-PC you can go. People were uptight in St. Louis when I left, but like a lot of people are compensating because we're in the Midwest. They feel like they need to be more woke or whatever, and people get offended. But when I came back for this month, it's been great. So I think the quarantine's made everyone loosen up because people just want to have a good time. And like, there's actually real problems in the world that everyone's now in the, you know, facing. So getting upset about jokes isn't a priority at this time, hopefully.
I mean, that's kind of a double-edged sword there, you know? Like, some people take offense to everything. Some people get it and understand that, you know, comedians are there to have a good time. They're there to make you laugh. I mean, I guess just to get right into it, I don't want to take too much of your time, but, like, over these past 12 months or so, I can't believe it's already been a year since this all went down. But, like, I've been trying to do your stuff, you know, creating stuff, writing stuff down. Did you actually have to do, like, Zoom shows and, like, Zoom competitions while everything was trying to get back to normal?
So, from last March through June, I was just quarantined in a studio apartment in a bad relationship. And I didn't get out much. I don't like Zoom. I've done a few Zoom shows. This is fine. But like doing stand-up comedy Zoom, it's just weird. I mean, it helps you to be like more conversational, which is always good, but it's not as fun as being live. And then what I did is once, like in the middle of June, these guys started up this open mic in Washington Square Park. So every day it was like the same, it was like 7 of us, then 8, then 12, then all of a sudden there were 30 people. And we would come out every day and just try jokes. And it's all just comics and like homeless people come interrupting and trying to get the mic to ask for, to sing for money and fucking crazy. And people living in the brownstones who are like offended at some stuff we're saying. So it was the whole thing. You froze. I think my connection's kind of shitty.
Oh, it's all good. You turned out for like 2 seconds there.
Okay.
It's authentic.
Yeah.
You know, like you to kind of go on that, you know, like having to deal with the different types of circumstances, trying to do shows, trying to do gigs, you know, like you just said, like out in the middle of nowhere where homeless people are trying to grab the mic and, you know, make it their own show. Like that is definitely, it sucks, but at the same time, I feel like that's going to make you better no matter what you're doing. Like you have to adapt to, you know, those strange circumstances. And I feel like it makes you better as a comedian because you're able to feed off of what's actually happening in front of you. And you're actually able to like go off from what's happening, you know, in current time, which I think is funny if you're able to pull it off.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. Like looking at hardship as a way of improving.
Mm-hmm.
The glass half full perspective, and it's easy to be cynical, negative, like when you move to New York to do this and then things shut down. But if you look at it the other way, it's like, oh, this is making me better, and maybe even it's creating smaller scenes where you're getting to know other comics even better, because there's like this you're like struggling together, you're suffering together.
I mean, when did you make the move out to New York City? Was it like literally just a few months before everything really went down?
October 2019.
Oh, wow. So you only had like a few months there.
Exactly.
Were, you know, things, you know, like up on the uprise, like when those first few months before everything happened, were you doing shows? Was it consistent work?
Yeah. You know, they say, I think Gary Goldman, I'll paraphrase, but I think he, you know, everyone loves him and we all love his advice. And he mentioned something about when you move to New York City, keep your head down for 2 years was the quote. So that makes me feel like in the quarantine, maybe it's 3 years before things really start happening. I was getting shows, like the way it works in New York City is there's so many ways to rise up. Like I'm having trouble with the words right now. I'm a little spotty. I had a show last night, went really well, but didn't sleep much. But like I had a couple auditions set up for clubs, which is a first step in the door. And I was pretty optimistic, but then quarantine came and those were scheduled for like last April. So, of course, I was unable to go through with them because of the quarantine. But things were going good. And now, like, there's a lot of shows outside and things like that. And I find myself getting booked by other comics. So there's upward mobility. It's just slow. What's going on?
Sure. I mean, and to kind of go back to, you know, what we were talking about before, kind of, you know, trying to adapt to a different culture, you know, like New York City, almost everybody in the world, like there's somebody from almost every state, potentially almost every country, almost in New York City. That's how overpopulated it is, how different it is. You know, when it comes to, you know, a certain style of comedy, because I know, like, just listening to interviews that you've done in the past, you know, like, some of your stuff, you know, it gets over, some of it people take offense to, just because, like, you never really know what the right atmosphere is to say the right thing or the wrong thing. What have you seen from, you know, New York City in that sense of, you know, people either understanding what you're there to do or people are there, you know, in today's day and age, what happened in 2020, what's going on right now, you know, taking offense to everything in that sense?
Yeah, I had some people get mad at me right before I came back to St. Louis because I was talking about how I'm donating to this child and jokes, but just because I look the way I look and I brought up Africa, there's people who were just like, you're not allowed to say that. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I'm talking about donating to a kid and I'm just being ironic about how I'm a moron and I'm selfishly like doing it to feel good about myself. It is the irony, you know, I'm working on a bit and God forbid I have the wrong look to talk about a subject and not even in a way that's that like disparaging to the, you know, people, man. It's comics are always cool about subject matter because they're comics. They understand you're trying to find the funny in it. But people who aren't comedians just sometimes will hear a word and not even know the perspective, right? This is my mom's computer. That's why it says Elaine. They don't know the perspective you have, but they hear one word and you're not allowed to say that. You don't fit this category that can talk about that. It's like, geez, it never gets, I mean, it's always old, rather. It'll
Oh, yeah. I mean, in that sense, like you are, you know, on stage doing your thing, and then you know it right off the bat if it works or it doesn't work. You know, like I'm sure, like even like in the early stages of doing, you know, open mics or whether it's competitions, you're, you know, going through this and people are not reacting to your jokes the way that you wanted to, or you know, they're not reacting the way that you wanted them to originally, and then you get off stage afterwards, you're like, yeah, you can't say that stuff. It's almost kind of like. Like I worked my ass off on this set and like, you're not appreciating that because you're, you know, kind of uptight about it. You know, you're taking offense to it and I don't know why you're taking offense to it, but I feel like that's gotta be frustrating. You remember like some of the first times that, you know, you told a joke up on stage and you know right off the bat that it didn't work and it kind of, you know, upset the tone of your entire set in a sense?
Yeah, there's, always something to like learning how to do it. Mm-hmm. If you're a lot of new comics will like try to talk about rape and horrible things, and but they don't know how to like convey the funny part, so they're just trying to be edgy. And I mean, those topics, like dark topics, I'm drawn to those because it's just fun to try to talk about something you're not supposed to. But yeah, I've definitely been there. Like, especially when I first started, just, I think being, if you go too dark or too blue, meaning like death, suicide, or going like gross bodily stuff, either direction, people just don't want to hear it. Unless you do it, or you can be a master. I mean, all the greats, right? They all talk about horrible things and make it worse. So I think that just comes down to experience. Specific examples, I mean, every once a week someone groans at something I say, so
I mean, that's, at this point I feel like I personally would just, you know, call them out on it, especially if like someone's shouting out in the crowd. I think that's what Bill Burr probably does the best out of anybody. When he sees someone who's calling him out in the middle of his shows, he immediately fires back and makes them look like the asshole in front of 50,000 people wherever he's at in an arena.
Yeah He's great.
So who, you know, getting into comedy, you know, at a young age, who were some of your inspirations of wanting to do it? Because obviously, you know, your dad, pro wrestler, your brother, pro wrestler, everybody knows the Ortons from, you know, a wrestling standpoint. You're doing your own thing, getting into comedy. Who were some of those inspirations early on?
Early on, Dave Chappelle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And just, like, random people. I would watch like Comedy Central at night and just see like different people, like Pablo Francisco, Jim Gaffigan, and I'd always enjoy it. But people I don't even know the names of, Greg Giraldo, I mean, great. When I was really starting comedy at 25 years old, I was really into Louis C.K., Anthony Jeselnik, who I'm still in. And I learned about Patrice O'Neill, and he's one of my favorites. Just anyone who gets up there and I notice all the comics I love have been doing it 20 to 30 years, and they talk about horrible things and make them funny, and they're great. So nothing original about who I like, but just the best out there.
Oh my, I mean, you know, I mentioned Bill Burr earlier. Obviously, he kind of goes off the cusp. He's kind of, you know, controversial, maybe some of the things that he says, even though, again, I feel like it shouldn't be. At the end of the day, you're joking. Then you look at Jim Gaffigan, like you mentioned, like total, you know, like American Dad-esque, you know, super clean cut guy. You know, I mean, you don't really, you know what's going to inspire you, but like those different types of people with different backgrounds and different, you know, sets, it's very interesting to like take a piece there, take a piece there, and see what you're able to mold. But you specifically enjoy, like you said, talking about things that you're not necessarily supposed to talk about.
Yeah.
What do you think, you know, molded that kind of personality for you and drive to want to do that?
Being irreverent's fun. I was always like a class clown, but I got good grades, so I wasn't like the kid that the teachers hated. They were just like, but like, I don't know. I've always been drawn to dark humor. My friends, more wrong it is, the funnier. And then being drawn to that, now I'm in a risky position of finding myself saying the wrong thing.
I mean, I should,
when you asked my favorite wrestler or my favorite comedians, I should have said like Stone Cold. When I do these, it's fun to like just talk without trying to be funny. So, but that was a missed opportunity. I regret it.
I mean, you know, I think Dave Chappelle's probably the best at that. You know, just talking, having a good time, and it just works. You know, it's natural. Like he doesn't have to try all that too much, which again, starting out, I mean, that's gotta be tough, you know, like experimented with a ton of things when you were first starting out, you know, again, like knowing when jokes aren't going to work, knowing when things hit and to kind of bounce off of that. Did you have any early, not like mentors in that sense, but people that kind of had your back early on and kind of, you know, showed you the ropes early on?
You know, being in St. Louis, like a smaller market, there weren't people who were at a level of someone you'd meet like in New York or something where they'd be able to take you under their wing. No one really took me under their wing. The comics who were already doing it were nice to me for the most part. But there's Greg Warren, who's a St. Louis guy and he's living here now, and he'd always like give advice on like how to write and the importance of writing and different journaling techniques. So he was great at that. But yeah, it's just a very young scene. All the vets, everyone from St. Louis moves. So like, as I started, like there was just like a class of comics who just all moved to New York or whatever. And I didn't really have any mentors, honestly, off the top of my head.
Interesting. So what do you
think? Other comics who were funny, but
I totally understand that. Like what do you think, you know, inspired you in that sense, to kind of piggyback on that question I asked before about being inspired about your style of comedy? Did you have any personal life experiences like later on that kind of shaped that? Like you said, like you weren't necessarily like the bad kid in school, but like did you have any experiences that helped mold that personality?
I mean, I think I would say just I've had a not a hard life.
Oh yeah.
Of course, but I had heart surgery, I've had hip surgery, I've heartbreak, of course, anxiety, insecurity, like I wrestled in high school, I wasn't very good, get a lot of skin diseases from that. I've had like a good life, because you think about people who have it real, so I don't want to say I've had a hard life, but I've had a lot of like shitty things happen,
right.
And I think it's just made me sarcastic and kind of tolerate like things that are super dark. It's like cathartic for me, just to not give language that much power. Like that's how we, it's so important to convey information and learn, but also let a word hurt you. So I think it's interesting, like the two sides of a language, you know, you're not going to kill someone with it, but you can say a lot. And I just like the power it has. And I sound all hippie right now, but
No, I totally understand. I'm kind of in the same boat when it comes to, I had a great upbringing, I feel like, but a lot of, you know, weird little shitty bullshit things happened that kind of like molded me into being kind of a sarcastic kid. Because like at the end of the day, you realize how much BS happens just because that's the way of the world. And you kind of have to just, you know, you can't take it too seriously. And you develop that personality that some people just don't get. And it's frustrating in a sense because, again, in today's day and age, you have a world where you take offense to everything. They have cancel culture, all that BS where, like, you know, some people are able to step up and get through to it. And some people, you know, get quote unquote canceled. And it's tough. So like in that sense of the imagination, when you're up there on stage and you're telling these jokes, do you have any fear whatsoever what people are going to think? Or is it just like, all right, let's let it rip. Who gives a shit?
I used to. There's like this weird balancing act where I want to say things I want to say, but I do want the audience to have a good time. Like, I feel like it's part of my responsibility. But like last night, I did all these, I talked about, I mean, really, I made it like a goal to talk about horrible things. And I didn't want to do, because it's just, I wanted to see what happened. I think taking risks is important because that's how you can grow. So like last night, I literally talked about suicide, pedophilia, bestiality, all these things. But like there's jokes and there's points and there's, it's pretty clear that I'm on the right side of things, but I'm trying to find the line, and it went well. Like, and people who came to a comedy show to have a good time, so they were cool, like sick and twisted, like some of the comics friends I have. So, but it was palatable to them, and that was cool. I was a little worried because I'm going up there to close out a show, and I don't want to bomb after, because there were great comedians on the show, and I didn't want to go up there after them and just look like an idiot, look like an edgelord without jokes. So it's cool when people can see the punchline and understand what you're doing and they're having fun with it. I would never want to be, I don't think I can be canceled because I don't have a career yet. But like what I say now, like I'm the type of, I'm going to keep doing this. I've made my path. I'm 33 with no kids. I have to keep being a comedian. Like I'm not going to just give up. So 15 years down the road when all this pays off, I don't need some, like if I said like the F word to you, you know, not fuck, but the other, and then someone, oh, look, he said a homophobic slur jokingly, you know, it 15 years ago, it's like that shit, dude, they just got mad at John Mayer. I'm a guitar player. I'm a big John Mayer fan. He played at the Grammys. And people were like mad because 13 years ago, he made an off-color joke in a Playboy magazine about how he's not attracted to black women. And it reminded me of a joke that I wanted to try. Like if that was reversed, like if a rapper, this is me pitching a premise. If like a black famous person said he wasn't addicted to white, or he wasn't attracted to white women, I feel like we would be like, oh, awesome. Okay. Less competition. Good. Like we wouldn't be offended. So it's just weird. People just, and I think it's, it always seems like it's weird, guilty white people getting offended on behalf of other people. It's just weird to me. But yeah, sorry. I just thought of it. Made myself remember. I need to try that. That's funny. Okay.
I mean, definitely go for it, man.
You like the premise, Jack? Did you like that premise?
Oh,
it's a little, it's risky. It shouldn't be, but it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally was picking up what you were throwing down in that sense because, okay. I mean, you
okay.
That so often. I mean, that's a perfect example. You saw Kevin Hart just a few years ago get outlasted with the Oscars or whatever other event he was supposed to host. They took him off because of something he said 12 years ago. You know, like, that's just the same thing to me. Like, if you say something that comes off as derogatory in today's day and age, and it doesn't come off as respectful at all, like, I can understand that. But to go digging deep into someone's past when it's literally the most, you know, it's corruption in a sense, because you're taking something completely out of context that happens for 1 second over a decade ago, and you're trashing the guy. I think that's very, you know, like I said, corrupt. It's kind of cynical, and it's very easy to make fun of in that sense. So if you're able to spin it right, like, I totally get that. Like, are you constantly trying new stuff every night, or do you have the same set? How does that go into most of your shows?
It ebbs and flows. So when I'm in New York, I'll walk around with like a little pad and I'll write ideas, and then I'll go see the same comedians I saw yesterday or earlier that day, and I'll try these new, brand new ideas by riffing about the topic. When I have a show, like when I'm doing 20, 30 minutes in like a comedy club, I go through all the, I take like a skeleton set of like, this all works, and then I pepper in the new stuff I want to try. So I'm both, to answer your question. But yeah, it's a struggle to figure out what I should be doing. Like, do I try to create this diamond of an act, or do I, I say it as though that's possible right now. There's to have this great act, but you also want to always have new stuff. So it's as cheesy as it is, I'm just always looking to improve.
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, I definitely try to put together the best jokes that flow. And I always want to try something new. I think it's important to try something new every time you get on stage. And to answer your question, different headliners who came through, that would I was thinking in terms of like someone I like from this, but just in terms of like headliners who came through, a lot of cool guys who would give advice and things like that. Like Adam Ferrara, I just worked with him. He gave some, he actually said, make your goals to be the best comedian you can be. Never make a goal like, I want a special, because that's just out of your control sometimes. Like, or I want to be at this club or this network, you know?
Well, I mean, that goes back to, you know, like comparing yourself to who you were yesterday, who you were a week ago, as opposed to comparing yourself to someone who you see getting, you know, like a Netflix special, who's yeah. already made it. Like, you made a great point before saying, like, I mean, who cares? Like, you're working on your stuff. When you make it 15, 20 years down the road, like, it's all going to be worth it. So, like, never giving up in that sense is something that you got to be inspired by. You know, you're working your ass off trying to accomplish what you're doing. You make the big move to New York, you know, last yeah. year, to do what you want to do. Was that a plan for you, or was it finally just time to, you know, move on and try something different, making that move?
I knew I always needed to move to New York from the beginning. I just never knew when, and I finally got a plan. I moved back into my parents from an apartment to save for a year, and then I had met someone, and she wanted to move too, so
yeah.
It worked out for the move, and yeah. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I always knew I had to. And now that I have, I'm really grateful I'm up there. Now it's just about sticking it out.
I mean, right now, it's probably going to be the toughest it's going to be, in the sense yeah. of, you know, getting gigs during this time. You know, once yeah. everything goes back, it's going to be tough in a completely different way, trying to get over with, you know, crowds of completely different cultures in the city. Where exactly did you move in this? It's going to be different in a completely different way, trying to get over with all of these different cultures, you know, people coming left, right, and different in New York City. Where exactly did you move?
Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, that's an awesome place to be. You know, and again, kind of going back to the origins of this, you coming from, you know, you said you wrestled early on, weren't awesome at it, and probably didn't have, you know, an extensive passion for it, coming from, you know, a pro wrestling background family. When did you know that you wanted to pursue stand-up comedy, or when did you realize that, you know, that was something that you were really passionate about, something that you knew you had to pursue?
When I was 23, I went to the Funny Bone and saw the competition, and I thought it was really cool. A year later, I went to the same competition, and I was like, I could do this. And then 6 months later, I got hip surgery. And once I could walk again, I told myself I was going to try it. And then the rest is just me not stopping.
Wow. I mean, yeah. I mean, that goes back to you, you know, just pursuing your dream full front. Who cares what happens, really? Like, if you just keep yeah. going, eventually you're going to get there. You know, I mean, I truly believe that. I know you probably believe that as well. And was it, you know, supported on early on by everybody? Like, Were there any naysayers within, you know, either the family or friends around you? Or was it always just like, yeah, man, I mean, you've always been a funny kid. Why not?
Yeah, I've never, no one really ever gave an opinion. It was kind of just like, oh, he's doing that. And then people came to see me eventually. And I would have good sets in front of people who knew me. And they go, oh, okay, you're not horrible. And then, yeah, no one really, people were generally pretty supportive.
Was your first ever, you know, comedy, you know, sketch or skit in front of just a few friends, just be like, hey, can you tell me what, you know, what you feel about this? Or did you actually start, you know, like you said, you know, doing gigs at the Funny Bone now?
It was the open mic.
Really?
Yeah, you start, yeah, that's how you start, open mic night, yeah. And it was at the Funny Bone, which is where I was last night, so it's kind of cool. It's like the home club.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a full circle thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very nostalgic in a sense that you're able to, you know, again, go back and kind of regroup, reminisce with people that, you know, were in your life in the past and able to do everything again. Because, you know, you talked about, you know, having to do, you know, a few Zoom shows here and there during COVID and everything. And it's just like a total bomb because it's not the same. You're not able to read people's body languages. You're not able to, you know, feel that energy from the crowd, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. And I that's probably like really cool. Like, do you have another show tonight that you're doing?
Yeah, just an open mic in the in another club. It's a new club, but I'm gonna go try that thing that I thought of talking to you, because I think that's a funny premise.
Did you write that down beforehand, or was that just off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, but that wasn't very funny. It was the premise of it, you know? And then now I gotta find all the pieces.
I'm so boned. I forgot to get my girl tickets for the show tomorrow, and now it's sold out. It's her freaking birthday.
Aw, dude, she's totally gonna break up with you.
She's definitely gonna break up with me.
Should've used Tick Pick.
Wait, what'd you say?
Tick Pick, look.
Oh, whoa.
What? There are no hidden fees. What'd you guys think I said?
Oh, Tick Pick. I thought you said
Tick Pick. No hidden fees. Download today.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.